Hey, so welcome Evan and Mike to our first technical meeting for the HSTLD group. The purpose or the agenda today really is to go over the control set in a little bit finer detail than we might get to in our normal call. So I put a really quick agenda together, typical sort of agenda items with a heavier weighting toward talking about what we're trying to accomplish in the beginning of this one, and then really going through the control spreadsheet as quickly as we can, as accurately as we can. So the first thing I need is roll call. We have Evan Leibovich and Michael Pelage. Is there anyone else? Oh, and Francisco Arias just joined as well. Is there anyone else that is on? Okay, great. Does anybody have any desire to change or review the agenda that I sent out? Mike, would you like to have a few minutes before we begin, or can I just dive right in?
Dive right in, my friend.
Okay, thanks. All right. So I've got an Adobe Connect opened. Evan, I see you're on, and I'll expand our little thing here to full screen. I apologize for the clarity of this on Adobe. It doesn't look to be very good, but I'll try to, here we go, I'll try to make it a little bigger so we can all see. This is the material that is essentially posted up onto our wiki. So you've probably all seen it before. What I'd like to accomplish today is to go through as many of the principles, objectives, criteria, and illustrative controls that we can. I'm also working on a little bit of a format change for this document because of the feedback that we got in our other weekly call around the readableness, if you will, of the document. What I'm doing is I'm trying to separate out the objectives and the criteria, saying that those are sort of the mandatory components of the program. And then for the illustrative controls, I'm trying to separate that out on the spreadsheet so that's more intuitive. Hold on 1 second, guys. Sorry about that, guys. I was just telling Craig that we got our call fixed up. So it makes it easier for it should make it easier for the reader to understand that the objectives, so the principles, the objectives, the topics, and the criteria are sort of the more set-in-stone components, the harder-to-change components, and that the controls that we're putting in here are really illustrative controls, and that if an organization feels that they've got equivalent controls that can meet the criteria topics, they're welcome to come up with their own control structure and sort of work on that with the assessors to agree that the controls are adequate or not. So that's how I'm trying to separate out the next version of this, and I should have that done for us by next week. So it won't be on a technical call next week, but it'll definitely be able to be sent around to the HSTLD team to look at and post to the wiki.
Andy, can I make one suggestion while you're at it? And this may be one more. I mean, the last thing I feel like doing is adding one more column to this. But one of the things that made it in the last call really hard to go through was when you said, well, scroll through this, and it's three lines below blah.
Yeah.
Okay. Would it be possible just to give a numbering scheme so every one of the individual line items, so like, for instance, under 1.1, right, you have a number of controls under 1.1. So, for instance, right, so I'm just looking at what you've got on Adobe Connect. So we've even got two under there. So you've got one that's the ISO 27021.1 and another one 71.2. Those are different controls as far as we're concerned, right?
Yeah.
So would it be worthwhile calling like one control 1.1.1 and the other control 1.1.2? So that when we're having these discussions and you're saying, okay, let's go quickly to control blah.
Yeah.
It's very easy for everyone to get down to that and be on the same page, literally.
You know what, Evan? Let me do this. I'm going to show you. I'll post. I'm going to change the document here real quickly. So forgive my bouncing around. I'm going to show you sort of what's in development. And I think it will...
Is this a shadow development, Andy?
This is Andy trying to get a little bit ahead of the process and make this thing go as fast as I can. I didn't want to project this necessarily to a larger group today, but Evan, if it's just you and Mike and I, I'll sort of show you where I'm going with the development.
Oh, okay, cool.
This is what I was picturing. So you can see I've sort of changed. I haven't changed the content, but I've changed the presentation a little bit. And to your point, you can see. So I changed the illustrative control examples to try to be very specific that whole section would be something that could be modified by a registry, registrar, or registrant. So the controls there would be illustrative examples, but could be modified. And then off to the left, I tried to say, well, this is the standard objectives and criteria that need to be met.
Right.
In addition, I put a little HSTLD criteria number. So we've got an objective, so we've got a principle 1, then an objective number, so that's 1.1, and then a specific criteria, 1.1.1, and then if I kind of go down, let me go down here and show you how I did this. Then there's 1.2.1.1.2, and you can sort of continue down the line.
Right.
I didn't necessarily number the illustrative control examples, although I could.
I just thought that might make it a little more easy, might make it a little easier, and especially now that you've broke it into sort of two semi-spreadsheets here. If we're at the point anyone's talking about controls, it makes it much easier if you say, okay, can we go to control 1.1.1.13 or whatever.
Whatever it is. Okay, I'll add that column in then. And what I'm doing now, you know, I'll keep this one up as sort of the latest development candidate. I didn't want to necessarily, again, you know, talk about this one on the call without putting it up to the wiki, and I just didn't have time to put it up to the wiki. I literally just finished development on this version today.
I actually had edit access into the wiki, and the moment I went in to edit and saw the spreadsheet and how big it was, I didn't want to touch it without.
Yeah.
You've clearly got this nailed.
Andy, just a
go ahead,
quick
Mike.
Question here.
Yeah.
Just trying to be neutral, putting on the chair neutrality hat here. And could we just call this the controls for HSTLD program? And remember the certification and let's just...
Ah, yeah, okay. Good
so,
call.
So I'm just trying to sit there before we cross that bridge. I don't want people to say that we had predetermined what bridge we were crossing. We got controls, and I think these controls could be equally implemented for a variety of mechanisms.
Yeah, that's a very good call. I will, before I post any changes up to the wiki, I'll remove that certification out of there. So it just says controls for HSTLD program. Okay. So with that, that's sort of the direction I was going with the formatting of the document to help make it a little simpler. Why don't we start digging right into the principles? I think the principles we're all pretty comfortable with. They've been out there for a while. But let me go through sort of the objectives, the topic, the objectives, and the criteria. And then, Evan, you know, feel free to jump in at any time. If you've got, you know, some areas you want to focus in on more than others, just kind of let me know.
Well, it's just, I mean, I feel a little embarrassed because I'm one of the people that called for a separate technical meeting, hoping that we would bring in, you know, the law enforcement folks and the financial security folks into this part of the meeting that may not have cared about the political side of things, but wanted to get more involved in the controls. So I'm feeling a little embarrassed about this call having so few people in it.
Well, you know what? I think on the first one, So my expectation on the first one was really that we wouldn't, you know, from last week's decision to this call, I didn't think we'd be able to get a lot more people on this call. So I'm not actually too surprised. So don't be too embarrassed. I think it's an expectation that, you know, as we go forward, I think we should seek to get more members if we can, interested in providing the feedback. And that's why on this call, I wanted to look at the formatting of the presentation of the material. As the first objective before we really even dug into the controls, you know, and I think that's sort of a reasonable thing to do with a smaller group, right?
Fine with me.
So let's start digging in a little bit, though, and maybe we can, you know, maybe we can just cover off some of these areas. If we have to be duplicative in next call, we can do that. But I think, Evan, you've got some good ideas on some of these controls and can add it sort of to what I'd had in the draft. So the first objective, 1.1, is about registry IT infrastructure security. That's the topic. The objective is that key elements, let me try to make this a little bit bigger here. It's hard for me to even read. Okay. The objective is that key elements of the IT components that support the TLDE infrastructure are secured and appropriately protected from unauthorized physical and logical access. To support that objective, our first criteria deals with information asset management. So that's database, accuracy, integrity, and availability services for zone, registration, and other customer data.
Okay. So, but is this the I don't think. Do you consider the data accuracy to be an infrastructure issue? Is that a data integrity? This is where I'm getting a little bit out of my expertise in asking if things like accuracy of the data is an infrastructure issue.
Right. The reason that we put it under there is that it's sort of part of CIA under security. What I would say is let's park that concern for now and let's kind of revisit that as we go forward. So why don't we do this? Why don't I quickly go through, for this objective number one, let me quickly go through the HSTLD criteria that support it, and so we can kind of get a picture of how that criteria support and objective works, and we can kind of revisit and say, well, does that make sense or not? Does that work, Evan?
Perfect.
Okay, so information asset management, that's the first one. The next one, let me see if I can get down here. The next one is about network security. That's 1.1.2. So if you look at it in order, the first one's about asset management, information asset management, and security around that. The next one's about network security and the security around that. And then we go to 1.1.3. We talk about system access management.
Mm-hmm.
1.1.4 is about application security and interface controls. 1.1.5 is about encryption requirements and secure communication channels, so authenticated, encrypted connections with registrars. 1.1, did I get my numbering wrong here?
No, you had a 1.6 that you went past.
There it is. Okay. 1.1.6, system software release processes and system acquisition and development controls. That includes third parties. 1.1.7 is periodic vulnerability testing and response exercises. 1.1.8 is security incident management control and security incident response and reporting. 1.1.9 is name resolution service management controls and the DNSSEC deployment plan. 1.1.10 is all about general security management. 1.1.11 is personal security or personnel security. 1.1.12 is physical access control and environmental control. And then finally, 1.1.13 is media storage and disposal. So those 13 criteria are meant to basically support the overall objective is that of the key elements of the IT components that support the TLD infrastructure are secured and appropriately protected. So to get back to your question of, Evan, you know, does it make sense to do the accuracy and integrity and availability, keep in mind we're talking about those elements from an IT infrastructure perspective.
Yeah, Andy, I'll be the first to say I'm a bit out of my element making, you know, trying to make that kind of determination. This is the kind of thing that we want the technical people in here to help with.
Gotcha. Okay.
But the way you've got it laid out here is just, I mean, from what I can see, is complete, but others may come in and have other nits to pick. I don't know.
Yeah, which is certainly always part of our process, right? We can do that.
Hey, quick question, Andy. Do we have the same bridge or do we have a different bridge number for the 5 o'clock call?
You know, that's a really great question. I think it's a separate bridge number, Mike, because it the way I think that Craig does it is he gives us about an hour and a half on each call. So we didn't quite have enough time to make it one bridge.
Okay, I'm going to have to drop off here for a second, and I'll be dialing back in for the top of the other one, okay?
No problem.
All right.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, Evan, so let's keep going. I mean, you know,
yeah.
You know, let's kind of keep cranking through. You know, maybe there will be a point where we get to the, you know, question of an area that you think really does stand out as, whoops, that doesn't look right, and, you know, we can get drill down to it from there.
Well, I'm not the only one here. Francisco's also in the Adobe room, and I just saw Brian Cute join in.
Oh, very cool. Hi, guys.
Yep. How are you doing,
Brian,
guys?
Hi, Francisco. Francisco, Brian, did you hear sort of the backup of the criteria? Did you have any questions on them?
No. I'm following along, and I'm sorry for the background noise. I will go back on mute. And I probably, you know, don't have the technical expertise either to add, but I will have a couple questions about audit aspects of criteria and objectives and principles that lead out of this. So I'll just go on mute and come back later.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks.
Francisco, did you have any questions about the material we've covered already?
Not yet. Just a procedural suggestion. You may want to close or make smaller the windows of the attendee list and the chat in order to have more space for the real content here.
Can I do that? Let's see. Oh, yeah, hold on. Does that work?
Yes, that works.
I'm kind of new to Adobe Connect, guys. Forgive my ignorance. Okay. Okay, so let's keep moving forward. The next area, or the next objective, 1.1.2, if I can get there without going too crazy here. So the objective is really registry IT infrastructure availability. So we drill now down into availability. So TLD services are available for use per contract or commitment. So the key here really, it's about service availability per contract or commitment. That's the way we want to think about these criteria. So 1.2.1 is disaster recovery and business continuity plan. Failover practices, including plans to sustain name resolution service in the event of a business failure, and exercise it. So all the little illustrative controls support that. The next one's about the registry agreement, 1.2.2.
Andy, sorry, just so I can follow along, because I don't see the farthest. Can you go back up?
Yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah, no problem.
That's perfect. So, okay. In the gray, you have HSTLD topic, objective, criteria. I just want to understand, so in the left column, one over from the far left column,
yep.
Is I'm just trying to track what is a principle, what is a criteria, what's an objective in this layout.
Gotcha. Yeah, so Brian, let me go quickly through. And this is, I don't know if you heard it earlier on the call, this is a very fresh draft of me trying to make this material a little easier to understand. That comes out of our conversation from last week's HSTLD call. And basically, what I try to do is say that there's really the standards, the principles, the objectives, and the criteria on the left side. Those are the sort of quote unquote as set in stone things as we can make, right? And then on the right side, we've provided some illustrative control examples to support the criteria and objectives. But we're not, an entity is not locked into those controls. They could have a control environment, for instance, that has, you know, very different controls, provided they meet the criteria and the objectives and are approved by a qualified assessor. You know, they could come up with their own actual controls.
Okay, thank you very much, and I'm sorry they had to back up like that. One quick question, and I'll back off on mute. Do you envision the auditor or the third party who's reviewing doing a review of at the criteria level or just at the principles level or both?
Both. I actually anticipate that an audit of this would have to include the controls. And I think, this is, Brian, this is a really great question. The way I've been sort of expressing it, and we get to a little bit of this comment content in the report card concept, I would think that an auditor would have really two options, similar to if you're familiar with a SAS 70 Type 1 and Type 2.
Yep.
One is sort of point in time and one is period of time, for those that aren't familiar. So as an auditor, what I'd want to do is I'd want to come in and I'd want to make an assessment of the controls in either for a point in time, and in which case I would come in and I would say, right, a control existed for a specific point in time for my review, and that's all I was saying. Or I would like to make a statement about the control over a period of time. So some negotiated period of time, I've come in and I've observed that the control worked sort of as advertised for that period. Obviously, the review for the period of time is a more valuable control attestation than the point in time, but it's also a more involved and expensive audit, right? So I guess to answer your question specifically, I'd want to see these specific controls, either the illustrative control example or a company's equivalent control operating for either a period of time or a point in time.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Probably a question for the next half of the call because.
I'm sorry, Evan, and I'm going to miss the next half of the call, which is why I interject. I'm sorry to.
It's absolutely important that you ask that because, to me, there's a limited validity that says, okay, this registry was a high security zone at 3:14 on March 12th. I'm not totally sure how much use that is for the purpose of sort of long-term, is this a high security zone?
That's a good question, too. So, Evan, typically what would happen in other types of programs, you'd have some kind of report that the controls were in place and operating, and you'd be reviewed 1 year, say. And then there'd be incumbent to maintain your report card status, so your green or your yellow status, or your certification.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two methods of assessment we've been kicking around. In order to maintain that level, you'd have to have some kind of periodic re-review of your control environment. So in the case of, I've got clients, for instance, that request yearly sort of SAS 70s, right? Maybe the requirement would be for a yearly review of the controls. That's not uncommon. Maybe it's every other year, but there's some level of, periodic review in order to maintain your good standing, if you will.
Understood. It's just that's from the ignorant public point of view, I think there's an interesting distinction between things were qualified at a certain instance in time, as opposed to this is a place that is trying its best to be secure all the time.
Yeah, and so that's a great question too. So there's a limit to what an auditor can do too, right? Because your time to audit is finite as well, and you can't watch a control and have a third party sit over someone's shoulder constantly to say that control continues to work, for an infinite amount of time. There's not a really good model for that.
No,
so
but you could have it at a random time as opposed to a known time.
Could do that. So there's that method, and then the SAS sort of SAS 70 method that the AICPA sort of endorses is more. So if you can't have it sort of creates a structure that if you take as a given you can't do the continual control assessment, it's good enough that you do periodic assessments over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. It gives you at least a more of a comfort that nothing was being done. You can't ever get to the comfort that it's being done every single time, but you're seeing that there's a good process, a good control in place, and that when you're coming in and doing your testing, that's when you get into the, picking sort of the random times and all those types of things. That's sort of how that mechanism works.
Yeah.
good mechanism. You know, it's good. It's what they call good enough, you know, for the industry today, for the audit industry.
Understood. And some controls will be more easily done either on an automated or random basis than others, obviously.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Okay, so what I'll try to do for the next version of this, I'll remove the certification as requested by Mike. I'll sharpen up any typos that I have because, again, it's, you know, really fresh off the development block here. And I'll try to put these topics where, I don't know if you guys can see the little hand waving up there, but this row I'll try to put on each page so that everyone knows sort of what columns they are as you're flipping through. Okay, so let's get back down to number two here.
Guys, unfortunately, I have to drop. Thank you for letting me come in and make the intervention. And I, with that understanding now, Andy, I'll come back on the list and try to raise some more questions just to make sure I get clarity on which direction you're going.
Awesome.
Thanks a bunch.
Ryan. Thanks very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. I've gone a little bit too far down here. My Adobe Connect skills are weak. Okay, so 1.2, as we said, was all about infrastructure availability. And let me just close. Let's see. So the first criteria there is the disaster recovery. So it's all about disaster recovery and business continuity plans. So all the controls in there we'd see, you know, related to that sort of an effort. The next one's about the registry agreement. And that's all we have. That's all we have supporting that criteria. But if you look, those two elements have a lot of controls that are associated with them. Most of them come out of the ISO 27002 standard, and they're all about continuity management and planning. The interesting one here, and this is what I wanted to dig into a little bit on today's call, is the registry agreement controls. You'll note that NA in the column for where I drew the control from, that's because there really wasn't a good control structure that I was aware of that I could pull from. So these would be, you know, in our other call we have this notion of the more TLD specific controls. That's these guys. So 1.2.2 is really where that material begins. So because they're more registry specific, I'd like to just quickly go over them for a sanity check. Again, you know, noting that there are obviously other opinions we want to get on this, but here are what they are. So the first one is the service level agreement should provide metrics and methods to measure performance of the HSTLD registry operator and provide accredited and licensed registrars with credits for certain substandard performance by the registry operator. The next one is the SLA should define the terms used in the agreement, define the responsibilities of the parties involved, terms for providing credit to affected registrars, terms for dispute resolution, and should use an addendum for miscellaneous additional items. I'm going to remove this. Go ahead, Francis.
Sorry, you're going to remove what?
I'm going to remove this number 6 question mark for the next rev.
Ah, got it.
Because I haven't heard anyone yet say that there should be an ad, so I'm just going to get rid of it. Francisco, did you have something?
Yes. You mentioned that that the registered operator should provide credits for certain substandard performance by the registered operator. I believe at this point the operator agreement doesn't have any provision on that.
So the service level agreements don't have that already? Is that what you're saying?
I believe they don't.
Okay.
At this point. But there is one new version coming, so I don't know.
Maybe you and I can talk to, I don't know who the right person to talk to about that would be. But maybe we can have a chat about that offline.
Sure.
So just to point me in the right direction. Thank you.
Sure.
The next little piece here is about the WHOIS service. So the control is the HSTLD registry operator's WHOIS service should be available for free public query-based access at all times, unless availability requirements are specified as part of the registry agreement. So what we're saying is the general control is it should be available at all times. We are acknowledging that there are some instances that that may not be appropriate for. It should be, that should be reflected in the registry agreement.
But the controls for these are going to be mind-bogglingly simple, because what you've got here is clear enough in saying if the criteria is saying the SLA should do blah,
right,
then a visual inspection of the SLA should be able to determine whether or not this criteria is met. So the control is literally just a visual inspection to confirm the criteria.
Correct. For these specific controls, that's absolutely correct, Evan, because they're about what needs to be in place to support the structure.
I mean, we're going under the assumption here that we're examining either a publicly posted policy by the registry or components of its actual contractual agreements with other parties. So,
correct.
So as long as there is a publicly stated policy that can be seen that way, and as long as these agreements have that, like this is the controls are staggeringly simple here.
These controls, yeah, they're just, yeah. That's right, and that's by design. That, you know, the control doesn't have to be necessarily complicated, but it needs to be there. That's because it is a really important sort of tenet, right?
Right, and they're very binary. Either it's there or it's not.
Correct. So now we get into WHOIS service performance level, and I know this is very contentious, so there'll probably be more dialogue about this. In fact, of all the control sets, I bet this is the most contentious, but let me just lay it out there, right? The first one is the registry agreement should clearly specify the WHOIS performance requirements expected from the HSTLD registry operator. The next one is the HSTLD registry operator should provide ICANN with a monthly or periodic report, which should include number of WHOIS queries during the reporting month, the amount of time for which the WHOIS service was available during the reporting month, root cause for any WHOIS service interruptions observed during the reporting month, and additional performance requirements should be reported on based on the specifications in the registry agreement. So that's a cover-all that basically says if there's additional elements specific to your registry that are in your agreement, it needs to be here too.
Now, forgive me for not looking at these elsewhere. This specifically deals with WHOIS. Are there other areas here where we're examining their ability to resolve queries? To resolve IP lookups? I mean, the WHOIS is nice, but it's a secondary function to actually resolving the addresses.
And I'm thinking, so... Hold on one second. Hold that thought for a second. Let's see. I think under...
Mind you, we're talking high security and not reliability here, so the ability to resolve the IP lookups actually is probably a secondary issue here.
Andy?
Yeah, go ahead, Francisco.
There is the SLA in the current draft space agreement. You may want to use that as a basis to write some controls on this section. There are provisions for DNS availability, resolution time, update time for DNS, WHOIS, web-based WHOIS, and TTP. So you may want to use that as a basis.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Can I get together with you, Francisco, to kind of spearhead where I can get that information?
Sure.
Thank you. Okay. So Evan, let's keep holding your question in our back pocket, and we'll see if we kill it as we go.
Okay. Might be irrelevant.
That's a good question, though. Yeah, I gotta spend some thought on that one, I think. The next one is the registry agreement should include provisions for conducting WHOIS performance tests by an independent third party. These provisions should include providing the HSTLD registry operator with an advanced notification of the opportunity to evaluate the testing tools and procedures to be used by the independent third party. Written notification to the HSTLD registry operator containing the results of any testing within an agreed upon time frame, including the method used for testing and the location of testing. So that we want to see in the actual registry agreement. All right, now we get to the response times. So there's three controls there. The HSTLD registry operator should monitor and report on the response times for WHOIS queries based on the performance specified mentioned in the registry agreement. The registry agreement should clearly specify the WHOIS performance requirements with respect to the service times expected from the HSTLD registry operator. And the registry agreement should include provisions for conducting performance tests by an independent third party to measure and report on WHOIS response times.
Andy?
Yep, go ahead, Francisco.
About these provisions for performance tests, there is also in the SLA currently a provision for ICANN to have a SLA monitoring system, meaning that there will be a system doing the periodic monitoring of the different level, service levels of DNS, HTTP, and all that. Maybe, I don't know how this goes to fit together. If we already, suppose we have this system working, do you still want to have this provision? Should this be something different to that system?
No, actually, this should be an agreement. You know what we might want to do, Francisco, you and I sort of pull some time together, if I can maybe get an hour of your time or a half hour, and go through these individual illustrative controls one by one, and maybe kind of work that material into it. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Because that's the kind of material I just don't know, and I think if I get to the right expert, you know, for perhaps you or whoever it is, we can get that information put in here real quickly, and it just improves the structure, that's all.
Sure.
Okay. The next one's about accuracy and completeness, so there's two controls there. The HSTLD registry operator's WHOIS service should be the authoritative WHOIS source for all second-level internet domain names registered in that HSTLD and for all hosts registered using those names. I hear a question boiling.
The question's actually was simmering from the last go-around a few questions back. Is this process going to specify a benchmark for things like response times? Or are we simply going to insist that they have a way of measuring it? If we just say they have to have an auditable way to measure it, it doesn't look like we're requiring them to make that information public. So one of the things that this program needs to do, I think, either whether it's the report card method or the certification method, is to actually say, okay, it's not enough just that they have an auditing method, that they've used it and they've met a certain benchmark.
Ivan, this is Francisco again. Again, in the SLA, there is currently a provision for the registries to pull this, to send this information to ICANN in a monthly basis. And just like the current monthly report from the registries, this should be public with probably a three-month delay, just like it is now.
So what I'm trying to do is strike a balance, and let's talk about this for a minute. What I'm trying to do is point the requirements of these controls to the SLA and make the SLA sort of the authoritative source for the description of those specific requirements, Evan. And my logic there is I don't want to necessarily put the control requirement into this structure because
it
changes. Like, it changes SLA to SLA.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, here's where we're defining what the controls are, So you're saying that there may be an appendix or another document that says, here's the minimum requirements that we expect for something to be able to call itself an HS zone.
Well, no. What I'm saying is, these are the controls that it takes to be an HSTLD zone.
Right.
But I'm not. You'll see, even when we get down to different controls about authentication, I'm trying to not be technology specific or control specific, because it makes the burden of keeping this up to date very difficult. So what programs like this typically do is they'll point back to something like an SLA or like another structure that would have that level of detail in it that would have to change anyway. So the requirement is to make sure that structure and that process is there, and to make sure that people are following it, so that it sort of makes it a more manageable and overall more effective program.
Understood. Will there be a part of the program anywhere that sort of defines what is the minimum sufficient metric in order to accomplish law objective?
I think that's in the SLAs, right?
So that will differ from registry to registry?
It could.
Okay. I'm just saying, I can see some confusion there with different registries having different proven metrics, and all are saying that they're high security zones. That's all I'm getting at. By saying we're going to leave the metrics up to the SLAs, then essentially this program then has given up the determination of what is sufficient to do to justify the designation.
Well, I think what we do is we need to make sure that those SLAs are specific enough to give that level of comfort, right? And I know that there are already, or I think that there are already, you know, minimum requirements that are out there.
Okay, I don't want to press the issue. I realize, you know, we got only 13 minutes left on this call. It's just I'm trying to look at the public interest side of things, that and most people aren't going to go into SLA details. And essentially, when somebody's saying, I want to trust this TLD because it's got a high security designation, that needs to mean something. And it doesn't just mean that the measurement facilities are in place. It also has to mean that when they actually measure something, that it's measuring something that meets a certain benchmark.
Agreed. I think the question really is, I think that process needs to occur. The question is, where do we do it? So
right.
Another challenge we have is, and let me just bounce this. Let's work through this as a good thought. So the other challenge is, if we put it into the, if we put a specific number into the HSTLD program, the challenge there is going to be that then everyone has to comply. Every registry that wants to be an HSTLD registry has to comply with that number, right? So it could make it very difficult for smaller registries versus larger registries. You know, what's the right number? You know, number of transactions or response times. That's the concern, right? So the way you get around that is you say that our registry agreement process and our SLA process are strong enough that we're defining good levels in those vehicles, and then you point this program to make sure that those things are working and accurate. I don't know if that's the assumption that's right or workable, Evan. So I'll leave that out there as an open
yeah.
item. The way it's structured today is with that type of assumption. So in other words, it's trying to make an HSTLD program that could be evenly applied to different size registries. I guess that's the right way to put it.
Okay. If there was a known categorization that would make that work, I'd be with you. I'm just concerned that we're going to get into a situation where registries can pick and choose their own watermark, and it's going to be really hard for people to judge.
Gotcha. And like I said, I'm very willing to take any of these controls, and instead of saying, you know, performance level specified in the registry agreement, put actual numbers in there. If we think that's the right thing to do, let's do that.
Well, this is you and me talking. The moment registries start getting a hold of this, nobody's going to want to have numbers that they have to get to. So this is going to be contentious.
I can see that.
But it boils down to part of the purpose of why we're having this. This is, you know, this is not a matter of instilling registry trust. This is a matter of instilling public trust.
Right. Right. And to do the right things, right. So I'll leave that sort of out there. If we want to modify the control or any of these controls with specificity, let me know.
For the purpose of this call, it was just a matter of do they go in this document or not, and the answer is no, and that's fine. If the metrics themselves go into an appendix or something like that or a different document, that's a very valid point.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's see. We've got about 10 minutes left. Let's see if we can crush this one off, because after this, we get into confidentiality and almost to principle two. So after this, we're almost done with principle number one. Now, again, I went through this really quickly. The homework I'd like to give everybody is just under principle number one, take a look at the illustrative controls. I think we went through the objectives and the criteria in pretty good detail, but I glossed over a lot of those illustrative controls that I drew from other authoritative sources. So between now and next technical call, please try to make an effort to take some time and look at those things.
And I'm going to assume that this is also going to go out on the mailing list, so all the technical people and the law enforcement people that were in this from the beginning, they're the people we need to really have a look at this.
Yeah, I sent out the agenda yesterday for this call to the mailing list. And I think what we do on today's call, Evan, is we just remind everyone that it's occurring and encourage people to come and participate. And I'll remind people in the mailing list too.
Okay.
Where were we? We're under availability monitoring now. So there's two controls there. The HSTLD registry operator SUIS service and the name server infrastructure should be monitored for availability at all times by the HSTLD registry operator. An appropriate monitoring tool should be configured and deployed to adequately serve the monitoring needs and alert the relevant personnel on account of any events. That's about availability. And then our little final bucket here is registration and transaction data escrow, including escrow. Excuse me. So there are a number of controls here. And let me just read them off. The escrow account should be established to deposit all data identified in the registry agreement between ICANN and the HSTLD registry operator. The HSTLD registry operator should store in escrow a complete set of data in an electronic format with data escrow provider to meet the data escrow requirements outlined in the registry agreement. Data escrow provider should verify that the data is complete, accurate, and delivered in the intended format. The escrow deposit verification process should validate completeness and integrity, accuracy of the data, as well as validate that the file format sent is the format received, so the correctness. Data should be securely and electronically transmitted at regular intervals, as outlined in the registry agreement. Changes to the schedule, content, format, and procedure may be made only with mutual written consent of ICANN and the registry operator.
Now, for a control like that,
yeah,
you say it can be made. Now, does that mean this policy must exist as opposed to we're actually checking it?
We're actually checking it. We would actually then go in and check that, Evan. So two things. You have to look at the existence of the control, so make sure the policy exists, and then you have to look at the functioning of the control, so you check to see that it works.
Okay.
Now, the natural question to that is, well, some of these controls won't execute in the period of examination. That's not an uncommon thing. What an examiner will then do is note that, an auditor would then note that as they're going through, say, look, you know, we looked for evidence that the control was executed, but during our period of review, there was no control execution, right? So that would be part of the report. It wouldn't necessarily mean a control failure. It just means that the control didn't have a chance to be executed.
Got it.
And that's a similar structure for you. You look at like a that happens commonly with things like Sarbanes-Oxley controls. You know, there are some controls that organizations have that just don't have an opportunity during a fiscal year to happen.
Did they have whistleblower mechanisms that say, okay, you haven't been able to check it, but we have a couple of people that can offer evidence of nonconformance?
Usually a certification will have that. We haven't really talked about that yet, and that's a great question. I am all for that kind of stuff. So
you may have a circumstance where the auditor comes in, they say, well, we can't find any evidence for or against from our checking. But
right.
All of a sudden, here comes across somebody and say, well, I have some evidence that they didn't get ICANN's permission in order to do something.
I'm taking this down. Whistleblower.
I can't think of a better term for it right now, but
no,
you get the idea.
That's actually a common industry term, Evan. That's a good one. Okay, let's look at this last little control here, and then we've got 4 minutes left. I think it's a good sort of closing point for today's call. The escrow agent slash provider should certify that it is allowed to receive the deposit under the applicable laws slash acts. So, again, we can't really get too much specificity there because there'll be country to country or locale to locale issues. But we want to see that process is in place and working. And that's it. If we look at 1.3, the confidentiality and privacy, you'll see I sort of grayed that one out, and that because that criteria is really associated with Objective 1.1. And that takes us through the structure of Principle Number 1.
If that's the case, why not just, if there's a way to combine the two so we don't even have a 1.3?
I think in the ultimate revision of this, Evan, that's exactly what I want to do. I wanted to leave it in there so people could mechanically see, you know, what I was doing when I was building it.
Got it.
Yeah, great.
Okay.
And basically add that piece under 1.1. All right, so that's a great stopping point for today's call. I've got some good material here. I've got at least three things to do. Let me cover what I have. I've got to remove controls from the title of this thing for Mike Pelage. Francisco and I are going to sit down and we're going to look at some of the NA controls this next week. And then this concept of whistleblower, Evan, I think is a good one. I'm going to try to bake that into the right level as well.
Okay, that's probably more in the mechanics of evaluation than it is in the definition of the controls.
I think you're right. I think that we want to put that probably into method of evaluation. That's what I'll call it. But that's a great concept we want to get out there. All right, everybody, thanks very much. I will talk to you again in 3 minutes on our other call.
So it's a different phone number in? Is that how it works?
It is. I apologize. Yeah, it's a totally different number. So I've actually got to switch over as well.
Okay. Oh, I got to go to find out where the email is for that other phone number. All right. All right. See you guys there.
Great. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye.